Welcome back. It's a Thursday, the 30th day of May, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And let's start off our look at the real news today with a bit more of the fake news. The big distraction, well, one of them anyway, so we can get it out of the way up front. From the guy who's always been one of the leading contenders, and of course this is saying a lot, for sleaziest man in Washington. The fixer himself, witch hunter Robert Mueller, who officially turned in his own broomstick yesterday, but not before a bit more of the usual, typical, totally slimy backdoor prevarication. By now, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. We did address it briefly yesterday, which was more than it deserved then. But the Waystream Media, of course, has been working really hard ever since to make a mountain out of a molehill, or you could say to continue to try and make an impeachment case out of absolutely nothing. Easy case in point, typical slimy headline from the New York Times. Mueller, in his first comments on Russia inquiry, declines to clear Trump. Good grief. About all they haven't done yet is report breathlessly on the age-old question, as if they just cleverly thought of it. Trump fails to answer a question about when he finally quit beating his wife. And, of course, true to form, they therefore lead off with the singular quote taken out of context from Mueller, who said, "If we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so," unquote. And if you believe that, folks, you probably think the WAPO and New York Times are still real journalists. I've called it the wink-wink, nudge-nudge indictment. We don't actually have any facts, but wink-wink, nudge-nudge, you know darn well there's a crime here, or we wouldn't be investigating to begin with. Wink-wink. Leftist across the swamp is basically what the New York Times then goes on to say, immediately seized on Mr. Mueller's refusal to exonerate Mr. Trump to call for the president's impeachment, which we all knew they were going to do anyway, folks. It's just that Mueller gave them the wink-wink, nudge-nudge, Saturday Night Live seal of approval. So let me turn for some real news on the same subject to J.D. Hayes at Natural News. I like their headline instead of the New York Times or WAPO. The real bombshell, they say, is that Mueller just threw longtime DOJ colleague and former good buddy, Attorney General Barr, under the bus by insinuating, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, that he lied about POTUS Trump's guilt. And they do put it in quotes, at least here, in the Russia, Russia, Russia hoax. If you needed any additional evidence, it begins that there really is a deep state, other than the fact that Hillary Clinton is still breathing free air and POTUS Donald Trump has been ensnared in the biggest political hoax in our country's history. Former special counsel and chief witch hunter Robert Mueller just provided it by throwing his longtime colleague and friend, William Barr, current attorney general, right under the bus. Hayes then goes on to provide a bit of background on the relationship between these two good buddies. I don't feel inclined to repeat all that stuff other than to note this was part of the reason why I always had my doubts whether A.G. Barr could truly be trusted or not. So far, at least, he's shown a lot more integrity than anybody else there in the swamp. Note, of course, that the real criminals still haven't been indicted, and we haven't seen any orange jumpsuits. But what's interesting in this is that J.D. Hayes does go back to March, where Mueller and his handpicked team of Democrat and Hillary-supporting lawyers released their so-called report, admitting that they didn't find any evidence that the man that most of them never wanted to be president in the first place actually colluded with Russia, nor could they find enough evidence that he obstructed justice. And here's the kicker. During subsequent Senate testimony, William Barr said he was, quote, frankly surprised by Mueller's decision that he wouldn't be making a determination regarding that obstruction charge. This on March 5th. Nevertheless, Barr told senators that he specifically asked if Mueller's decision not to make a determination had anything to do at all with longstanding Just Us Department guidelines stating that a sitting president cannot be indicted. And here's what he said, quote, Special Counsel Mueller stated three times to us in that meeting in response to our questioning that he emphatically was not saying that but for the Office of Legal Counsel opinion, he would have found obstruction. He said that in the future, the facts of the case against a president might be such that a special counsel would recommend abandoning the OLC opinion, but basically, folks, this weren't one of those cases, quote, This is not such a case. Says Hayes, Mueller just committed a real breach of at least prosecutorial ethics, because generally they can either make a case against a suspect or they don't. There's never a no determination one way or the other of alleged guilt. But on Wednesday, notes Hayes, Mueller not only upended 230 years worth of American jurisprudence, well, why not, folks? Most of the rest of his swamp critter associates have been doing that for a long time. He did so at the same time by impugning his longtime colleague and, maybe we can say it now, former friend. So here's the upshot of all this. Mueller specifically told Barr that the OLC policy had no role whatsoever in his decision not to recommend charges against the president. And yet suddenly, he now publicly implies, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, that he's changed his mind. Say, some observers, good thing Mueller wasn't sitting before a grand jury because he just committed perjury and probably lost a friend too. But the fact that he's willing to do this, concludes the article, should prove to any serious observer of Spygate that the deep state really truly is for real, and that when it comes to the now President of the United States that they never ever wanted to allow anywhere close to the Oval Office, they'll stop at nothing to get rid of him. Well, all right, now that the headlines have cleared and the damage has been done, fast forward to the latest developments, where Mueller backtracks on the press conference, tries to clarify matters, this time in a joint statement with Bill Barr. And I'm kind of wondering, does this mean he'll still get the big former FBI head book bribe? Probably. So after the media was able to get the punchline here and run with their foaming-at-the-mouth idea that Trump would have been charged with a crime if he weren't president and could have gotten away with a whole lot worse, presumably, if he were Hitlery, it does seem that maybe Bill Barr finally got a hold of him and now has him clarifying matters. And yeah, I did put that word in there on purpose. So if I can stand reading it, we will. Here is the joint statement from Carrie Kupek, spokeswoman for the Department of Justice, and Peter Carr, spokes-sellout for the Office of Special Counsel. And they said, quote, The Attorney General has previously stated that the special counsel repeatedly affirmed that he was not saying that, but for the OLC opinion, he would have found the president obstructed justice. The special counsel's report and his statement today made clear that the office concluded it would not reach a determination one way or t'other about whether the president committed a crime. There is no conflict between these statements, unquote. And basically, I like this colloquial summary, Mueller's now saying, wait, I never said Trump would have been charged if he weren't president, only that the fact that he was president is why I didn't bother to answer the question, unquote. So with all of that on the table, especially the reprehensible display by the former FBI head and former special counsel, I love putting all of that together, it's good to remember there really still are some honest liberals out there that are still willing to call out liars and spin when they see them. And in this case, I'm talking about author and Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz, a liberal with integrity, who was on Hannity Wednesday night and went off on the feckless witch hunter.
What I saw today was him putting his thumb, his elbow on the scale when he said, quote, if we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. That was absolutely inappropriate for him to say. It was worse than anything that Comey said when he exonerated Hillary Clinton and then said, but she engaged in extremely careless conduct. Everybody condemned that. This is much, much worse. And it does show that he had a motive to help the Democrats here. There's no other possible motive why he would have gone out of his way to say that.
And Dershowitz went on to explain how he could have easily said exactly the opposite. But no, it wouldn't have left the wink-wink, nudge-nudge impression.
But no, he emphasized only the possibility the president might have committed a crime. That went well beyond his authority as special counsel. It also showed we never should have had a special counsel. We should have had an objective, neutral, nonpartisan investigative commission.
Wow, what a concept! Objective, neutral, and for crying out loud, nonpartisan? Well, this is about as far from that as you can get, without question.
A special counsel was a terrible, terrible mistake, and I think Mueller's statement today proves that beyond any doubt.
So let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter and the smokescreen. Is it an obfuscation? Is it a sellout? Has the damage been done? Has the point been made? Of course. And remember, folks, this is obviously still the swamp we're dealing with. And the real key here is, not only is the smoke really thick here,
the dark side of the force is strong in this one.
On the heels of that, I'm going to give this next piece all the time it deserves, which isn't much, but it does make a brief point. On Wednesday, noted the Gateway Pundit, the Wall Street Journal reported that the Trump White House, allegedly, turns out it wasn't true, ordered the U.S. Navy to keep the USS John McCain out of view during President Trump's recent highly successful visit to Japan. The hit piece was meant to do the most possible damage to the president. Suffice it to say, it was more fake news. The fact that the story has now been roundly refuted by everyone from the Secretary of Defense to the White House doesn't matter. The bogus story is out there, and the media is engaging in yet another distraction and anti-Trump feeding frenzy. I've got an update today on the We Build the Wall folks. They're trying to fund a private section of wall on the border between, in this case, New Mexico and Old Mexico. And for months, the piece from the Gateway Pundit's Jim Hoff begins, the liberal media mocked We Build the Wall founder and organizer Brian Colfage and his noble plan to use private donations to build the much-needed security wall between the U.S. and Mexico. And yes, in this case, on private properties. So they not only have the permission of the property owners, but their blessing. Brian raised over $20 million in private donations from over 260,000 individuals to build a border wall on the southern U.S. border. And this Memorial Day weekend, We Build the Wall had their first half-mile section of border wall near El Paso, Texas. They've dedicated it and talked about a public celebration, actually supposed to happen Thursday night. But as you might suspect, when there is success, there's usually Big Brother or his minions that are trying to thwart any such progress. Has a cartel paid off city officials? Ask Aiden Salazar at Infowars.com. Local papers don't see any problem. It's just bureaucracy as usual, and nobody can fight City Hall. That private company building the wall has been forced to halt construction after a very far-left mayor of Sunland Park, Bernie donor, and some even suggest he may be on the take from various Mexican cartel operations, ordered a cease and desist against the We Build the Wall project, claiming they failed to comply with an ordinance regulating the height of fences and had neglected to obtain the proper permits, even though those folks say they have the city on record saying, yep, you can go ahead and start. All you got to do is come in and pay the fees later. But maybe assurances from corrupt city officials aren't what they used to be. The project, which is about 80% complete and evidently holding, needs to, quote, close a gap in fencing between the Rio Grande on the east and the Mount Cristo Rey on the west, according to the Washington Times. And the city is now claiming, hey, look, we managed to find an ordinance saying the wall can only be 6 feet high. So, ha ha ha, gotcha. The mayor says, at this point, we will turn it over to the courts, and you already know who wants to make sure the border invasion continues down there. In a statement to the Washington Times, General Counsel for the Wall Project, Chris Kobach, you may remember the name, Secretary of State for Kansas, said they were told the person in charge of receiving the city fees was out on vacation, but they can go ahead and start work and begin so long as they paid the fee later, when the guy who gets the money gets back from vacation. Meanwhile, there's a gap, and Big Brother has managed to thwart any attempt to try to reduce the invasion flow one more time. Well, besides the coming Civil War and World War III and the continuing invasion from the South intended to bring all of that about expeditiously, what else is going on that's being obscured? Which brings us, of course, at least for a minute or two, to the economic meltdown that'll be front and center in all of that. Even though you're not going to hear much about it, you'll just feel it, and people will see it on the shelves at Walmart. So a couple of stories that I like to call harbingers. Here's one from oilprice.com via Zero Hedge about Iran, whose oil exports have plunged dramatically to 400,000 barrels per day in May. And that has some interesting implications on a number of fronts. After the U.S. ended all sanction waivers for Iranian oil customers back on May 2nd, this story begins, Iran's crude oil exports have been significantly down this month compared to April. Basically, they're down to less than half of Iranian oil exports last month, well off their 2.5 million barrels per day peak in April 2018, just before the U.S. withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal and moved to reimpose sanctions on the Sharia state. And there are several issues raised here, because some of Iran's oil exports, says the story, are believed to have already been under the radar. Earlier in the month, Iran was spotted resuming illicit shipping of oil to Syria. And all of this means the inability to fully track Iran's oil supply is making OPEC and its allies' task to assess global supplies to the market increasingly difficult. Because opaque data about what Iran is doing adds to mounting uncertainty over oil supply disruptions elsewhere, clouding OPEC's outlook on global supply for the rest of the year. And the bottom line of this story is, inquiring minds want to know, is this good news or bad news? Are Trump's sanctions having a desired effect, or simply moving towards the Bolton goal of mushroom clouds on the horizon? And there's this from the bureaus of, well, let's just say, not too reliable statistics. Second quarter GDP has been revised lower to just barely over 3% as corporate profits, says the Zero Hedge headline, tumbled the most in 3 years. Wall Street, though they begin, was stunned when the BEA, or Bureau of Economic Analysis, reported a far stronger than expected first reading of first quarter GDP, which soared to 3.2% and smashed earlier expectations that it would print around 1%. But today, the Department of Commerce reported the first revision to that first quarter number, which revised it fractionally lower to 3.1%, still just barely above the consensus, and certainly better than the 2.2% recorded in the fourth quarter of last year. Consumer spending, which accounts for the majority of the economy, grew by 1.3%, barely topping projections for an unrevised 1.2%, though still at its lowest point in a year. Government contribution, SIG, to GDP was virtually unchanged at 0.42%. And today's report also gave the first read on business earnings, it says, for the period, suggesting that corporate America is facing some headwinds from the trade war, and the effects of Trump's tax cut are finally beginning to wane. And lastly, but certainly not leastly, there are questions which remain over the suspiciously low GDP deflator of just 1%. In other words, folks, I'll say it again, if you can understate inflation dramatically, you can make GDP look a lot better than whatever it really is. But Zero Hedge concludes with this somewhat ambiguous statement. Indeed, they say, inflation was even more subdued than initially reported. You buying that? Which could bolster some calls for a Fed rate cut. Ah, that's the ticket. And the core PCE price index, excluding food and energy, rose at a 1% pace. That's the slowest, they say, in 3 years, and revised down from 1.3%. As a reminder, they note, the Fed targets, yes, they're looking to see if they can't create a mere 2% price gain year over year in the broader index. And here I'll note simply that John Williams of ShadowStats and his estimates of real inflation calculated the old-fashioned way via a number of different metrics all come in quite a bit higher than what the Fed is trying to sell you. On the trade or other kind of war front with China, this news is also upsetting financial markets. It was called a big wake-up call, and the Chinese bond market has been roiled by the first-ever major communist bank failure. For the first time in nearly 30 years, China has announced it's taking control of a bank, in this case, the troubled Inner Mongolia-based Baoshang Bank, due to the serious credit risks it poses. And to put that in perspective, given that this is China, they must be really serious indeed. A related story out yesterday via jsmindset.com, Zero Hedge and others, says that the People's Bank of China has now panicked and flooded the market with liquidity as interbank funding freezes following the Baoshang seizure. On Wednesday, it says, what with China's bond market continuing to be hammered in the aftermath of the government's surprise seizure of Baoshang Bank, the PBOC finally panicked and on Wednesday injected a whopping 250 billion yuan, or $36 billion, into the financial system via their own open market operations, as it fills what traders have dubbed a growing gap following the Baoshang failure. Consequences of the liquidity flood were instant. China's overnight repurchase rate, a measure of interbank liquidity, tumbled the most in 3 weeks, while the benchmark 7-day repo rate also declined. And as you might expect, folks, there are repercussions in bond markets pretty much worldwide as well. Because China, of course, isn't even remotely the whole story. Here's yet another harbinger. It's a Bloomberg report revealing how at least one Mexican bank or employee directed a retirement fraud scheme at American retirees living in a village called San Miguel de Allende in Mexico's central highlands. The headline says Americans, i.e. expatriates in Mexico, have had their life savings wiped out in a Mexican bank fraud scheme. Monex Casa de Bolsa S.A. de C.V. Monex Grupo Financiero has been investigating allegations that somebody, supposedly an employee, stole about $40 million from American clients. All told, bank officials say 158 accounts have simply disappeared. And the rest of the story seems to suggest that there may be more to this than meets the eye. We're not talking about a country or a banking system, in other words, known for its integrity. I like this comment via a notarized letter from an attorney of one of the people involved. Quote, if a relatively low-level employee can go into your account, change your email address for notifications, change your password, redirect deposits, withdrawals, and wire transfers, then you have a kindergarten-level security system safeguarding tens of millions of dollars. Unquote. And here's the message that I think ought to resonate with all of us. Caveat emptor. Especially, folks, when the whole stinking system is based on nothing but fraud from the very get-go. Which brings me to an observation also from Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge that I find downright prophetic in a time such as this. The headline summarizes it this way. Morgan Stanley, quote, something is not quite right. And just a few days it begins after Morgan Stanley's chief equity strategist, Michael Wilson, warned that, quote, volatility is about to rise a lot. The executive director of Morgan Stanley's Institutional Equity Trading Group, one Chris Metley, has sent out an ominous warning of his own, cautioning the bank's clients that, quote, this week has been one of those markets where something just doesn't feel right. And he's talking about all kinds of what most folks might call relatively nerdy stuff like valuation spreads, bond yields, and various kinds of differentials. But the conclusion is this. The future will tell which way all of this goes, but recent price action does suggest markets are at a turning point, unquote. Which leads me next to an observation from one of the guys I do respect a lot, and that's Doug Casey, coming via the International Man and, of course, Zero Hedge, who says, this, whatever's coming, is going to be one for the record books, and he adds, much worse than the unpleasantness of 1929 through 1946. This is the best time to think about it, begins the increasingly bearish, but not really for a short term now, Doug Casey. The U.S. economy, he says, and he's not the first to say this, you've probably heard it here too, is a house of cards built on quicksand, but with a tsunami on the way. He goes on to say it's important to review the definitions of depressions. One, a period of time when most people's standard of living drops significantly. Two, a period of time in which distortions and misallocations of capital are liquidated. And three, a period of time when the business cycle climaxes. And he goes into quite a bit of detail on all of those and the government meddling that brings it to a head. But the bottom line is this. This, says Doug Casey, is why I predict the Greater Depression will be, well, greater. This is going to be one for the record books, much different, much longer lasting, and much worse than the unpleasantness of 1929 through 1946. The warnings are out there, folks, on so many fronts, and it's arguably past time to start getting our houses in order for what's not only coming, but it's basically here, whether or not we're hearing about it from the waste stream. May Yahuwah bless you and yours.